Hi, it's Bob from Royal Spa. Soaking in a hot tub full of Epsom salts is the absolute best way to minimize everyday aches and pains. And we know all about Epsom salts at Royal Spa. Royal Spa hot tubs are the only hot tubs on the market that can safely and effectively use Epsom salts. Made right here in Indiana, Royal Spa hot tubs are the highest quality hot tubs on the market. Visit any one of our three Indianapolis locations or visit royalspa.com.
Ah, Royal Spa.
All right, we're back. Kevin's Corner. Coming at you on a Wednesday. We are, I guess, about 9 days into free agency. I would say this week, Eddie, one of the bigger things around the NFL is probably the Pro Day circus. Ohio State today, Alabama tomorrow, Kentucky on Friday. Sounds like Florida's will be next week. Obviously, those colleges all very relevant to the Colts right now. And then we are on the horizon with OTAs, or I should say the offseason program, OTAs, you know, specifically when you can get on the field, 7-on-7, 11-on-11, that stuff's a little bit deeper into the month of May, but, you know, the Colts will start up their offseason program under Shane Steichen coming up in April, and boy, the next time we do a podcast next week, we'll be like less than a month away from the draft. So love this time of year. And we do have a couple of free agent moves to talk about. Isaiah McKenzie. I do want to hit a little bit deeper on Paris Campbell and Gardner Minshew. I don't think we gave a ton of attention to those two. I don't even know if the Campbell move had happened by the time we recorded last Thursday.
No, we recorded as per usual, and about an hour later, not even maybe, had announced that he had signed with the Giants.
Yeah, we should like give out a warning for when we are about to record, and then you can just wait 30 minutes and there'll be some sort of news item that's breaking. So,
yeah.
So we'll hit on that. Jim Bob Cooter was on our morning show today. That is Kevin Inquirer here locally. I'll be honest with you. I don't know if it's the most enlightening thing you'll ever hear, but I do think Jim Bob's a nice guy, but you know, certainly a good amount of coach speak, particularly this time of year when you're asking any sort of draft related questions. But yeah, before we get into it, Eddie, how you doing, man?
I'm tired, KB. Just a little tired.
Tired from Pacer game. I guess that would be tonight, but I would say, is that due to the move?
Yes. Yeah, in large part due to the move and still working during the move, too. So.
Yeah, and this weather absolutely sucks for a move.
Oh, yeah. You know, Friday it was like high 30s and windy. Saturday it was snowing. And then Sunday it was still cold and windy.
Right. And then this week, if you have any lingering items that you're trying to move, it is just gloomy. And it looks like Seattle, basically, is what it is here.
Or England.
In Indianapolis or England, yes. All right, let's get into the pod. And let's start with the Isaiah McKenzie signing from yesterday. Eddie, this is a move that I like. I think why I like it is because it's a new ingredient that you have not had in the Colts' offensive kitchen, I think, in quite some time. Now, there are questions about Isaiah McKenzie from a dependability and reliability standpoint. Not an availability, and I know I'm getting a lot of ILTYs into the show here early, but he's available, he's durable, he plays a lot of games. It's just when he's on the field, you're sometimes going to groan a little bit in his inability to secure the football. So we'll get into that. But why I like it is because he is a versatile, gadgety speed guy. And when I say speed, vertical straight line speed, yes, but also lateral speed. And I think the side-to-side stuff, Eddie, is really what you have to focus on of, you know, I don't feel like the Colts, and I thought Paris Campbell would have some of this, and I don't think Campbell maybe gave you enough in this area that you hope McKenzie can kind of be more of a jitterbug for you. Think like third and five, put your foot in the ground, create separation and man coverage. And you just create a little bit with your speed, and boom, that separation's enough to make a big play. The red zone, when the field constricts and it's man coverage, you need guys like this that can potentially, again, create that separation with their speed and make a play. Obviously, he's versatile. He's touched the ball, or I should say he's carried the ball 47 times in his career. He's got punt return history. He's got kick return history. And I felt like the Colts had too many power forwards at receiver. And they needed a few more fairly Dickinson point guards. You know, a few more, and apologies to any Purdue fans out there. I'm giving you a virtual hug for that. But they just need a few more guys that bring kind of that speed threat that, you know, when he gets into a huddle, I think the defense at least needs to know where he is. And I don't know if you put Mike Strawn in the huddle, the defense is freaking out on where he is. Now, again, I think it's worth pointing out there are some inconsistency issues from a ball security standpoint. And this is why I look at the move, Eddie, and I don't want this to be viewed as that is your full-time slot receiver. In a perfect world, it would be. But I want to make sure that the Colts stay open-minded and say, you know what? Let's go out and find another wideout. And let's make sure we keep Isaiah in this. These are the Isaiah package plays each week. And how can we tap into those? How can we keep him versatile, keep him fresh, use him on fourth downs, but line him up in the backfield at times, jet sweep, reverse, et cetera, et cetera. The drop numbers are very alarming, Eddie. Very alarming. Last year, I believe he had the 9th highest drop rate in the NFL among wideouts. If you would have gone back to the year prior, he didn't catch enough balls to qualify in the drop rate category. But he dropped, I think it was 11.2% of his targets the year prior. That would have been the highest among any wideouts. Last year, again, it was 9.2%. If you want to look at just kind of the raw numbers, last year was about 6 drops and 65 targets. And the year before that, it would have been 3 drops and 26 targets. Eddie, I'm sure you recall Colts Bills from a few years ago.
Yep.
Obviously one of the best wins of the Frank Reich era. I thought when that game went from, wow, the Colts are playing really good football, to, holy shit, this is a rout, was when Isaiah McKenzie coughed it up on the kick return late first half. Colts got a short field, punched it in, I think to go up 24-7. I think it was 17-7. And, you know, at that point, it's 17-7. You're giving the ball back to Josh Allen. If they score late half, you know, it's a one-possession game going into half. Now, all of a sudden, you stretch the lead to 3 scores, and the rout was on. Fumble-wise, that was more of a rookie year issue for Isaiah McKenzie, but it's there. So I think we have to be realistic with those sorts of things. About there's a reason why he was cut. There's a reason why he hasn't been kind of the full-time, you know, slot receiver in Buffalo, because I do think it's a weapon that Buffalo has tried to tap into. What else? What else do you like about him? What else do you not like?
I was about to say, to the end there, that point you were making about him not being, you know, the slot receiver guy. I mean, they brought Cole Beasley in the end of last season for Buffalo to kind of provide some juice out of that slot position. They also brought in Jamison Crowder before the start of the year. I know Buffalo was very high on Isaiah McKenzie, but it just seemed like he couldn't find his way on the field routinely for them. And then you're looking at options as to why they may
And he
let
was healthy,
go.
To be clear, correct. During that. You know, I want to stress that. And, you know, Eddie, I wonder if the Nyheim Hines trade played into some of the, man, I wish we were getting more out of Isaiah.
Correct.
You know? And so, again, he has punt return history, and so that's where I think he could slot in there, because Nyheim Hines has been doing that for the Colts, you know, the past few years, and they didn't really find anybody late in the year to do that.
The other point I was going to add to that is that I think they want an expanded role for Khalil Shakir.
That's a good point.
Their rookie out from last year.
Yeah.
Who flashed really well against the Colts in the preseason. Then he had some moments during the course of the season and had that big drop in the playoff game. Had he been able to secure it, it would have been a big reception for Buffalo.
You know, when you think about speed guys, there's probably a couple stereotypes that come with them. And honestly, I think in McKenzie's case, they probably both apply. First, speed guys usually talk a bit. And I think McKenzie is a little bit more outgoing than what we're used to out of a Colts wideout, probably a little bit different than Michael Pittman and Alec Pierce, and I would say even T.Y. Hilton.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that like that's a bad thing necessarily. I'm just saying he's a little bit more of a personality, which I think you can make an argument the Colts need maybe some of that inside of their locker room. So I do think you are getting that. And then again, speed guys typically aren't the surest of hands, and the guys that are super reliable with hands aren't usually the quickest. That's just kind of how it goes. So I don't have that big of an issue with his drops in the sense of, like, you can't put him out on the field. Again, small package of plays, a versatile amount of plays. and just putting him on the field, it tells an opponent that says, hey, let's make sure we know where he's lining up. Because if he gets an angle on us, that's a guy that can do something with the ball in his hands that I don't think the Colts have had enough of. Paris Campbell, I would argue, Eddie, is more of the natural wideout of the two. But again, I never felt like Campbell showed to the level you were hoping, watch me make plays like I did at Ohio State with the ball in the hands. Like post-catch. You know, I've always said this about speed guys offensively. The beautiful thing about them is you're giving them the ball in a very high percentage touch, a screen, a dump, a handoff, whatever. You expect that ball to be caught and not be put on the ground. And then what you're saying is this ball is not traveling a long ways in the air. We're not putting a lot of risk on that. But we are saying with you having the ball in your hands, you take off and you do something with it. And I think that is what you're hoping for with Isaiah McKenzie.
Yeah, I was about to say, some of these veteran type of slot receivers, I'd be curious to see their numbers when they're operating with their rookie quarterback.
And I'm glad you brought that up because, again, so much of my what this offseason should largely be about is helping out the rookie, putting less on that rookie quarterback's plate. And this is a guy that I think can aid in that. Again, having said it, I still want one more. You can't ignore his inconsistency. You can't ignore he's 5'8". You know, Paris Campbell, I think one of the first things you will notice about Campbell is that dude's not small. I think people, when you see Paris Campbell in person, I'm like, he's a legit 6 foot, and he's a legit 195, 200 pounds. So that's what I think made Campbell a little bit more of a, hey, he can go play 60 snaps at wideout. McKenzie is not going to be that guy. Anything else on the Isaiah McKenzie front?
I don't think so. I'm going to make this quick transition to Paris Campbell so I can get out here and get some water. I got a little tickle in my throat.
All good?
Yeah, Campbell to the Giants, a one-year deal. Thought it was a little odd that the Colts would pass up on Paris for that price tag.
Yeah, and I would start here with Paris. First off, you have a Mike Groh connection with the Giants. Mike Groh, former wideout coach. I think that plays into some of the connection there. I wasn't a huge fan of seeing Paris Campbell leave, particularly for the contract that was handed out. Again, everything for this offseason needs to be centered around trying to support your rookie quarterback during fragile, inexperienced times. I think we oftentimes think, oh, you're just in tank mode. You're looking ahead to 2025, 2026, etc. You need to find the balance in doing that versus also making sure your rookie quarterback feels the support that he needs. What I wanted to see from Campbell, honestly, from a contract standpoint, was very much what the Giants gave him. You know, a short one-year deal with a lot of incentives within that. And I think that's what he did get. And I think if you look at your need list right now, we'll see how the rest of free agency plays out. But, I mean, wideout to me is still very much a need. Cornerback has only risen in need. I would say offensive line remains as big of a need as it was a couple weeks ago, and to me that's an interior prospect and a swing tackle. And you know what, Eddie? It was small bonuses, but Ryan Kelly and Kenny Moore got a couple bonuses over the weekend. They weren't massive bonuses, but they were financial bonuses that I think all of us would like to sign up for.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That probably is an indicator to me that they might not be going anywhere, or they might not be going anywhere very quickly. So I think you have to acknowledge that you still need to make some moves at those positions. And just from a cap space standpoint, I could see the Colts holding on to a lot of this, of what they have, and thinking, no, we need it for, you know, a Pittman contract extension. We need it for a Jonathan Taylor contract extension. So I'm very curious to see how that plays out. I think one thing to note on Campbell, you know, Eddie, if you look in that room and group the tight ends in that room as well, you still lack a lot of experience. You know, when you throw, nobody's really on a second contract outside of Mo Alie-Cox and Isaiah McKenzie.
Yep.
I think you could argue Mo Alie-Cox and Isaiah McKenzie have been two pretty inconsistent performers throughout their
definitely
careers. So,
definitely.
That is where my worry comes into play a little bit here when you're talking about, you know, providing some veteran experience for a rookie QB. You know, lastly, on the Campbell front, to me, well, I guess two things. One, this guy had 60-some catches last year, Eddie, and about 600 yards receiving, and that was with really bad quarterback play. Like, to me, with better quarterback play, he can be an 80 for 800 type of guy. The other thing to note is that 2019 draft class, it's filled with a lot of misses for the Colts, and it's just kind of salt is in the wounds when you look at wide receiver in that 2019 draft. You know, think about the wideouts that were taken. Deebo Samuel, A.J. Brown, D.K. Metcalf, Deontay Johnson, Terry McLaurin. These are all second and third round wideouts.
Yeah.
And in those two rounds, Eddie, the Colts made four selections. They had four picks. They ended up having four in the rounds two and three. Not a single one of those guys is still on the roster. And you drafted a wideout during that time. So whether it is Rock Ya-Sin, or it is Paris Campbell, or it is Ben Banigou, or Bobby Okereke, that's disappointing. When you don't use free agency as much as virtually everybody else in the NFL. And again, free agency is more to complement, to, you know, patch here or there. It's obviously not necessarily to build, but I still think it's an avenue that you can explore to help your football team. When you decide not to use it to that degree, drafts mean more. And so the 2019 draft undoubtedly is a disappointment. You know, it was the Kari Willis thing out of your control in his retirement, sure. But again, when you have the four picks in rounds two and three, you need one or two of those to be pieces that you're building with and are kind of cornerstone guys and wear a Colts uniform for 6 to 8 years and things like that. You're not getting that. EJ Speed's the only guy left from a 10-man draft class. So that was another reminder for me in losing Campbell. And I guess last thing on Campbell. You know, you held on to him this past season. I don't know if it feels like a total waste, but, you know, it's one of those, like, you saw him prove himself, and then you let him walk. Like, that's a little odd to me. Again, especially for the contract that you saw, which I thought was pretty manageable. I think Paris Campbell and Isaiah McKenzie both. That would have made a lot of sense for me because, again, I view Isaiah McKenzie much more as a gadgety,
yeah,
package a play guy, not a 58 snap out of the slot type of guy.
When you look at like the wide receiver room, as you mentioned for the Colts, it's got Michael Pittman Jr. and Alec Pierce at the head of it. So it wouldn't make sense in my estimation or in my eyes for them to be really looking at a veteran wide receiver that primarily plays on the outside.
Right.
And the guys that come to mind are like DJ Chark, like the only guy that really sticks out when you look at who's still there. Marvin Jones, maybe slightly, but then you look down a little bit and you see Mecole Hardman. He's 25 and he's available still. Now, I think a large part of that could be due to availability because he's had, especially this past season, injury history. But, you know, the speed is there with him and you can line him up anywhere on the field. So I'm interested to see where he ends up and if the Colts would have any interest in him.
Yeah, and again, I still want to see one more. I agree wholeheartedly with you on the types of wideouts that you should be going after. You know, from a skill set standpoint, you want to be diverse. You don't want to have all the same sort of ingredients in the kitchen for you. And I also think you want to get to a point where you get to the draft and you don't feel like you have to force needs, especially when, you know, there's a potential that you make a trade or there's a potential that, you know, you are taking a quarterback in round one, which obviously is going to take a really quality resource or asset to that sort of position. Anything else on Paris Campbell, or should we hop into Gardner Minshew before we get to Jim Bob Cooter?
Yeah, we can hop into the Shoe, who plays for the Shoe now.
Look at that. I saw a couple for the Shoe hashtags there. Again, I think we hinted at this on Thursday's podcast that Minshew was going to be the signing. I like it. I think he checks a lot of desirable boxes for a backup/bridge quarterback to the rookie.
I like the contract, too.
Right. Yeah. Contract seems very manageable. And if you look at the contract, you know, one for, what was it, like 3.5 and can make up to 5.5?
Yeah.
I think that sounds right. Obviously, that's the Colts saying, we don't know how much we're going to use him. I know it's a question my co-host threw to Jim Bob Cooter that you'll hear, but they don't even know, you know, how much they will need him to play this season. Why I like the Minshew signing, first off, Eddie, he's got playing experience in the league. He started in each of his four seasons, 24 starts. That's a pretty good number for, you know, quote-unquote backup or bridge. I think it's really important that he started a lot of games as a rookie. So let's just play out a hypothetical. Let's say it's Anthony Richardson in that room. Well, the fact that you have a guy that has started 12 games as a rookie, if Anthony Richardson plays as a rookie, he can be very beneficial to him in relating with that experiences, what those experiences were like for him.
And his starts came in the same division.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. But yeah, that is another little connection there. I think it's also key that, you know, he's had two starts each of the last two seasons, and those are with Shane Steichen in his ear. So the fact that, you know, he's used to Steichen lingo, how he operates on game day, how he operates during a week, certainly will know the kind of the core systems and core values of either offensive language or what Steichen kind of has principles for the offense. I think those are some other important things. I would think the one area where he doesn't check the ideal kind of bridge veteran backup box would be he was a sixth-round pick. And while Minshew mania has kind of evolved, it's not like this guy was drafted by Jacksonville and he was put on the side of billboards around town. When the Colts draft this guy at 4 overall, there will be fanfare and hype that Minshew did not have back in April of 2019 as a sixth-round pick.
And there's going to be a lot of, let's start X, let's start X.
Yeah, and again, Minshew got into the lineup as a rookie when Nick Foles got hurt week one. You know, it's not like Minshew won the job or, you know, there was hype to play him right away. But I know Shane Steichen loves his competitiveness. I know he loves his football intelligence as well. So, yeah, I'm good with like a quarterback room next year of the rookie, Minshew, and Ellinger. I don't see the need for Nick Foles.
You find it odd he's still on the roster?
A little bit. Yeah, I do. Again, I probably have to look closer at some of those roster bonuses and when they're due, but
that's the weird thing about it to me. It's like if you know he's not going to be there on the roster, why wait?
Yeah.
Like, what's the point? Like, the same with Matt Ryan. Like, you know you're not going to keep him, so why are you waiting until the last day?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is scar tissue from McDaniels, to be totally honest with you, of like, we've been burnt really bad, so why should we make moves before the deadlines call for them? With Foles, first off, I don't know if he really wants to be here, to be totally honest. And two, like, you're going to draft a quarterback in April. Maybe they're going to wait till the draft ends to do it. But again, Nick Foles doesn't need to be here. Like, I'd rather see Gardner Minshew play over Nick Foles, you know, given the age and all of that. Lastly, before we get to the interview coming up here with Jim Bob Cooter.
You call him Jim? Jim Bob? JBC?
I went Jim Bob. I went a little coach. I did not go Coach Cooter. That's where I decided to...
The Cooter Man.
To draw the line. Cooter Man could be good. Yeah, it could be really good. Especially if Shane Steichen gives up plays and Cooter Man's dialing him up from the old press box. Or maybe he'll be on the field. I think he's an on-the-field guy. Again, about 9 days into free agency so far, the Colts have lost these players, and not all were just free agents in the open market, but of note, Stephon Gilmore, Bobby Okereke, Brandon Faison, Matt Ryan, Paris Campbell, the returners or the newcomers, Samson Ebukam, Tyquan Lewis, EJ Speed, Matt Gay, Taven Bryant, Ashton Doolin, special teamer Tony Brown, and Gardner Minshew. On the notable free agent list, Yannick Ngakoue, Rodney McLeod, and Chase McLaughlin.
It's also worth noting week two is usually the busy week for Ballard. He kind of lets that, you know, the dust settle after the first week, and then he starts to dive into, you know, what's left over.
Like Isaiah McKenzie.
Week two, week three, yeah.
And that means they'll have a signing here in 2 hours after we post this podcast.
Right? I was going to say 5 minutes, but yeah.
All right, before we get to Twitter questions, here it was. This was Wednesday morning with us, Kevin and Querry, our morning show. New offensive coordinator, Jim Bob Cooter.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
How's the last month been? I know this is your second stint here in Indy. I'm sure it's been a bit of a whirlwind and trying to cram together before free agency and obviously the draft upcoming next month. But what's the last month been like for you?
Yeah, it's. I think it's always crazy. You know, after the previous season, when you get to a new spot, get to a new job, get to a new city, all the stuff that needs to be done. And obviously, we're working hard to get all that done. But it's been great to be back here in Indy. Like you said, I spent 3 years here as a young coach, and to be able to, you know, see a lot of the people, see a lot of the city, and obviously a ton of the folks that still work around the building here. It's been really fun.
How much, coach, of like when you come in and you start to assess obviously the offense that you want to run and you look at the personnel that's there, this is a time when rosters are always kind of in flux. How much direct say do you have in terms of, you know what, I think this is the kind of player we could use, or this is the kind of player we lack, or we're not using this guy enough, et cetera? What is the process of assessing your current roster and then making your wish list, if you will?
Yeah, I think organizationally we have a lot of discussions, right? The front office guys ask us for our opinion on a lot of different areas, a lot of different things, and then we want to have an informed opinion. So we're watching a lot of tape of our guys playing. We're watching a lot of tape of, you know, maybe free agents, maybe draft picks, all the stuff that wouldn't surprise anybody at home. But we're doing all that background work on guys. And then, you know, we'll have those discussions internally. And, you know, sometimes we have meetings about them. Sometimes it's a little more informal discussion. And, you know, you want to make sure you're prepared with what avenues you think are best to improve the team, improve the roster. And ultimately, you know, our job is to coach these guys and go out and find a way to score some points and win some games. But this is a important time of year to make sure you're – or we are kind of, you know, on top of the personnel game in the NFL and keeping an eye on everybody. And like I said, a lot of times coaching-wise, we watch a lot of tape, we write a lot of reports, and we try to have opinions.
You will be bringing in, or the Colts are bringing in, obviously, a quarterback in Gardner Minshew, with which you're familiar, working with him over the course of your career as well. Shane Steichen, that also is true for. In your anticipation, is Gardner Minshew a guy that you look at to be the one that's going to be running your offense next year, or is he in a tutorial role for a younger player that will be brought in?
I think I'm really excited to work with Gardner again. He's really fun to be around, really fun to work with, and really, really valuable guy for the organization, no matter how it ends up shaking out. I think really we're at the process as a staff, as an offense, of kind of evaluating every position at this time, like including quarterback, right? We're trying to get good players in here and, you know, guys that we think can help us get better. And I'm not going to put a certain button on a certain guy to be a certain role at this point, as much as just, you know, get everybody in here, evaluate everybody, get a little competition going, and, you know, try to make our offense better. So like I said, I'm really excited to work with Gardner again. He's one of a kind type of guy, and it'll be fun. It'll be fun being back with him.
And he's Jim Bob Cooter. He's the Colts offensive coordinator. He's with us here on the Payless Liquors hotline last year in Jacksonville. And I thought you made a really interesting comment when you met the media last week, Jim Bob, and that you said you've observed the quarterback position has kind of evolved over the years, where guys have a few more tools to work with. Could you kind of expand on that, and whether it was with a guy like Trevor Lawrence or it is evaluating this 2023 draft class, what do you mean by a few more tools to work with?
Yeah, I think, you know, in every position, there are different ways to succeed, and especially different ways maybe that have succeeded in the past. And the game evolves a little bit, and the players do as well. The players, guys that are talented in different ways. Sometimes as years go, you know, 15, 20, I'm sure, you know, you talk to like some college recruiting type guys, you might hear some of the same stories. Guys end up sort of seeing that certain attributes play well at different positions. So you're seeing different types of guys really at all sorts of positions that, that maybe wouldn't have been there in the 1990s or the 1980s. And, you know, from a quarterback perspective, you know, I would say we're seeing generally, you know, generally, I think it's fair to say the position as a whole in the NFL is a little more athletic at this moment, maybe than it was 20 or 30 years ago. And honestly, just because, you know, there's value to evading a rush. There's value to escaping the pocket and making a play downfield, throwing the ball. There's value to scrambling for a third down and getting a first down that way. And, you know, if there's value there, then if I'm a young kid and I can play quarterback and I can do some of that stuff, then maybe I'll play quarterback. And that's what we're seeing a little bit more of, I think. You know, there's all sorts of different guys, and there always will be. But, you know, the more tools you have to succeed, better chance you have to succeed, right? Like, you know, you build a house, you build a house, but you don't have a hammer. That's a little bit harder than having every tool available at Home Depot, right? So the more tools we have to succeed, and that really kind of goes for our whole offense. But I think that's true of the quarterback position.
It's a great analogy, by the way. I was hoping you were going to make a dart analogy to get back to that. But
I was going to not touch that. I was going to not touch that. I think I've gotten a little rusty. It's maybe been a while. But
I think once you have it, I don't think you ever truly lose it, to be honest with you. Again, Jim Bob Cooter's with us. I'd say one of the more popular questions I've gotten, and this goes for a lot of offensive coordinators that don't call plays, but you know, I think fans are curious, like, what does Monday through Saturday look like for you on a weekly basis, and what does Sunday look like for you when you're not calling plays? You know, so much focus is that, but obviously you're doing a whole hell of a lot outside of, you know, Shane's role on Sunday getting the most scrutiny. So what does a game week look like for you as the OC?
Yeah, and honestly, I think that's something that we have to have discussions on and make sure we're on the same page on when we get to that time. You know, like you guys alluded to earlier, it's a crazy part of the year for us. We're doing a ton of personnel. We're putting the playbook together. Some of those in-season specifics are things we would talk about in the future. But I'll just say, you know, I think my role will be to do everything I can to help this offense succeed, and specifically, as you know, what we do as a coaching staff around the building here, maybe when the players aren't around, to help Coach Steichen with everything he needs to get prepared for the week, to get organized for the week. You know, there's so many things that go on here behind the scenes, and ultimately, you know, if you're not calling the plays, you're helping the guy that is, and you're helping the players. And that's, you know, that's a simple way to look at it, but that's really the right way to look at it. Like, whatever I can do to help, I think, you know, that's what I'll be asked to do, and I'll try to find my best path to help this team get better.
Coach, I respect the fact that it would be naive of me for you to give specific names here, so I'm not asking that per se. But in this draft, there are, by all account, four quarterbacks that appear to be those that will go fairly early in the draft. And I'm curious, from your expertise and perspective, how big a gap is there from the first to the fourth when you assess them?
Well, I'm just going to say that it's a really fun draft class to look at. I've really enjoyed sort of getting going on that process, watching tape of the guys, trying to kind of find out a little bit more about these guys behind the scenes. And, you know, I'm not going to be in the mode of ranking guys or sort of answering your question, I guess would be the true way to say it. But it's a fun group to look at. It's really been, like I said, been a good group to watch and learn and really think about who they might be in the future. So I'm enjoying that process. I think a lot of us around the building here are.
Will you go to Pro Days, and what do you find beneficial about getting some one-on-one interactions with these guys, whether it is at a Pro Day, private workouts, top 30 visits, et cetera?
I'm without getting into specifics, I'm sure we'll have some interactions with these guys, and that'll be, you know, it's really important to get to know, you know, the draft picks, get to know the young guys coming out of college, and get to know guys that could potentially be joining your team, especially through the draft. Like every year we have these different methods, these different ways to communicate with guys and interact with guys, and I've found that to be really valuable over the years. To kind of know who you're bringing onto your team, who you're bringing onto your roster. and how you're moving forward with those type of guys. So yeah, I'm excited to get to interact with those guys whenever the time comes and keep some of the details of that in house. But like I said, it's a good group. It's an exciting group to look at.
My last question for you, Coach. Jim Bob Cooter's our guest, the offensive coordinator for the Colts on the Payless Stickers Hotline. I realize you worked with and know both these guys now from a professional standpoint, but if I'm not mistaken, you went to high school, to the same high school that years before you, Kelly Holcomb, had played, and then obviously you grew up in Tennessee when Peyton Manning was playing. Both of them were Colts quarterbacks. The bigger hero for you as a kid was which?
Well, that, you know, like I said, you try not to rank anybody. You're going to make somebody angry, but boy, it was, you know, kind of growing up, like you said, Fayetteville, Tennessee, the Lincoln County Falcons was the big high school, and then everybody went to Friday night to the game down at the Pit. That's what they call the field down there. And Kelly Holcomb, it sure was fun to watch back then. And, you know, obviously, like you said, growing up a Tennessee fan, watching Peyton do what he did, and then getting the chance to work with him at a few different spots, including here in Indy, obviously. Not going to rank anybody because I don't want to make a state or a county mad at me, but both those guys, it's pretty cool. Just walking around the building here, you know, getting a chance to look at some of the old teams. You know, they have some of the old team pictures up on the wall, and obviously being lucky enough to be a part of some of those. But then, like you said, every now and then you walk by one and you go, oh, there's Kelly Holcomb right next to Peyton Manning, and that's kind of a cool background story. So,
does Jim Bob Cooter have a favorite Indy establishment that maybe he ventured to a decade ago that now he's back here? He's like, you know what? Hey, I kind of forgot about that place.
Well, I haven't been venturing out too much, but I'll have to dig into the old archives and get back to all the good old restaurants and stuff around town. Make sure get to experience the city.
Have you ever been just Jim, or has it always been Jim Bob?
It's always been Jim Bob, yeah, and I haven't been just Jim, although, you know, from time to time, you have a couple different names, I guess. You get called a little bit of everything as you move around the country, but, yeah, it's always been Jim Bob.
All right.
He is Jim Bob Cooter. He will be the offense coordinator for the Colts under Shane Steichen here this season, and hopes, obviously, for many more to come after that. Jim Bob, really appreciate the time this morning. I know it's busy with pro days and all that starting, so thank you for that, and looking forward to talking to you again this fall.
All right. Appreciate it, guys. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Thank you to Jim Bob for that. Again, he will not be calling the plays, and, you know, I know, certainly held back with some answers there, but hopefully you found that somewhat insightful on, you know, guy Eddie, that I feel like my time in the NFL has created, like, Kevin, pay more attention to assistants, even if they don't necessarily have the most gargantuan role. Like, he isn't calling plays. So when the offense does bad, we will first call out Shane Steichen or the personnel. We aren't going to go to Jim Bob Cooter. But then I'm thinking to myself, dude, you know, 3 years ago, the Colts had a coaching staff of Frank Reich, Nick Sirianni, Matt Eberflus, and Jonathan Gannon.
Wild.
Each of those four guys are the head coaches of NFL teams. So,
and there's one that'll probably be a head coach in, what, 2 years?
On this staff?
Not on this staff, but on that staff in Bubba Ventrone.
Yeah, that is a good point as well. Bubba, you know, so it's one of those things where it's like, pay attention, you know, and it's good to, like, get to know these people because, you know, they are one really successful season away from potentially rising up the coaching ranks.
11 Twitter questions. You ready for all of them?
Let's do it.
Flip.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Ben is up first. He says, this seems obvious, but Isaiah McKenzie fills the void that Paris Campbell leaves with his departure. Healthy and a little bit more versatile. What are your thoughts there?
I wouldn't go completely. Again, gadgety. That's where I want to think of Isaiah McKenzie. I don't think the Colts, given McKenzie's resume, should say, if you guys really want to get technical, look at the Paris Campbell snap counts from last year. That dude played a ton of snaps. McKenzie has never really been that guy, so I don't want to put that pressure on him. Plus, I think unlike Campbell, you want to invite him into some special team stuff. So you don't want to put, I think, too much on his plate from an offensive standpoint. Also, I think he can be kind of a forgotten guy of like, oh yeah, they just want a whole drive without putting Isaiah McKenzie on the field, and then boom, you put him on the field, and he's able to make a play for you. So, you know, he will get chances in the slot, but I'd like to see one more wide out there.
I like to see a lot of 21 personnel. I think that's my kind of expectation based off of this, and you mentioning, hey, you know, Campbell played a lot of snaps, and if I remember correctly, last year with Philly, they did a lot of 21 personnel, not much 11, and if they did, they went three wide receivers, but they didn't do it often because they have the running game, and to me, that just kind of, I have that feeling to where it's going to be a lot of double tight end sets, one lineup each side, and a lot of, you know, running with Jonathan Taylor and whatever quarterback it is, if it is a mobile quarterback under center.
Yeah, if you're going to go that route, I'd like to see kind of a blocking tight end.
I would agree.
At some point this offseason, I'd still like to see a pass-catching running back. And no rush on that. That can totally be day three draft pick slash undrafted free agent. And then also, of course, one more wideout.
Jake's question is up next. Is this a hot take to call the Colts the best situation for a rookie quarterback between the Panthers, Houston, Texans, and Indianapolis?
That's a good question. You know, I'd
say yes.
Yeah, I could see. Again, I always kind of felt this during the hiring process because obviously all three of those teams had new head coaches as well. I always felt like the Colts having the worst situation or the least attractive job, I was always kind of like, I don't know if I necessarily totally agree with that. Like, to be clear, I don't think any of them walk into, like, great, great personnel around them. Again, I still think there's questions about the Colts' offensive line. I think there's questions about their pass catchers. They've got to prove themselves as well. Obviously, Jonathan Taylor helps you out a ton. And I think Shane Steichen helps you out a lot as well. So, you know, Jake and I had a little bit of a back and forth earlier in the week, and I think it's key to find a balance, Eddie. And
Jake, as in the guy that asked this Twitter question,
yes,
or your co-host?
Sorry. Yes, Jake, who asked this this Twitter question. I think it's important that you try and strike a balance with your skill group for a young QB of guys he can grow with and veterans that have been there, done that. You think back to Andrew Luck's rookie season. You think back to Peyton Manning's rookie season. You know, Marvin Harrison was 3 years into the league during Peyton's rookie year, but he also had some veteran wideouts around him that I think kind of helps early on. Not only helps Harrison, but helps him early on. You think back to Donnie Avery. You know, you had Reggie Wayne in 2012. You had T.Y. Hilton, but, you know, even Hilton had kind of grew or evolved in that rookie year. Avery, I thought, had a really nice 2012 season, and he's a guy that had been in the league for a little bit at that point. So I think it's important to try and do that as best you can.
Old
Daner.
Might be in the weeds here a little bit. C.J. Stroud and Deshaun Watson are represented by the same agent. Also add the fact that Stroud mentioned in his combine presser that he, quote, models his game after Watson. Could that be intentional? Basically saying, quote, I don't want to be drafted by Houston. Am I tinfoil hat here, or could there be some merit to that as we get closer to the draft? Thanks, Kevin. Haven't missed a show yet.
How about that? Old Daner. God, you talk about availability right there.
Reliability.
On the list, man. That's Canton, Ohio-like. No, I don't think it's a super tinfoil hat. Do I think it's like the end-all be-all that C.J. Stroud's representation is going to say, nope, we don't want to go to Houston, or however they view that? Not necessarily. If you look at the fact that D'Amico Ryans went to Alabama, there's obviously that connection with Bryce Young. if you want to get a little bit nitpicky, and I'm not really sure if this is something that'll be super relevant, but Nick Cassero was a quarterback in college, a little bit of smaller size. Would he be a little bit more open-minded to Bryce Young? Maybe, maybe not, but I think that's something that's worth mentioning as well. So I am under the impression, Eddie, and I don't know, maybe I'll be wrong on this, but I'm under the impression that C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young will hear their names called 1 and 2. I'm not super confident in the order, but I would be very surprised if the Arizona Cardinals get on the clock and one of those two is still there. And if that's the case, the Colts need to stop sitting at 4 and move up to 3.
So what you're saying is you're not buying into all this recent
Richardson
buzz.
To 1.
Yes.
Yeah, and I know Thomas Davis, who obviously is a great Carolina Panther, you know, he had some comments that some people inside that building like Richardson. I think it is, well, two things, Eddie. One, I think we have to remind ourselves that these next couple weeks will be very pivotal in solidifying the quarterback order for the teams. Right,
yes.
Now. Think back to the draft pick of Quentin Nelson. Think back to the draft pick of Alec Pierce. Chris Ballard's stamp of approval on Nelson came at the Notre Dame Pro Day, yeah. Watching Nelson in person. The stamp of approval on Alec Pierce came in a private workout in Cincinnati with Reggie Wayne and behind the scenes and getting to know these guys. I don't care one bit what these quarterbacks look like in their pro days. It's scripted. They can throw to their college wideouts, like all of that. Like it's very just like, what are my strengths? Let's make sure we only call plays to my strengths in these pro day settings. Where the pro days do benefit these teams is I'm whatever, Cam Turner, I'm the quarterback's coach for the Colts, and I go to Kentucky's Pro Day, and I can talk to the head coach, and I can talk to the play caller, and I can talk to the strength coach, and I can talk to people behind the scenes and say, tell me more about Will Levis as a human. That's where it's beneficial.
Yep.
The private workout, that's where you can get into, hey, Will, run this route, and have this drop back, and roll to your left and throw across your body like that. That's when you can get into, we saw issues on film. Let's see if you can correct them and how you look in those settings. That's when the on-field stuff matters a little bit more. So I think that's something to keep in mind this week. Also, I did want to throw this in there. Yesterday, I was talking with a scout from another team around the league, and we got into kind of a Richardson-Levis topic. And the Richardson thought from this scout was bigger, stronger, faster version of Malik Willis. The Levis thought was, don't overlook the 2021 film. His junior film, there's some Matthew Stafford in there. And this scout is a little bit more pro-Levis than Richardson, but then was quick to mention, knowing how much the Colts are enamored with traits, he could very easily see the Colts be more Richardson than Levis. I think I've said this before on the podcast. Eddie, if you took these four quarterbacks and you took their size and their measurables, and you plopped them into linebacker, Richardson would be the pick probably 9 times out of 10 because Ballard is such a big traits guy. My question, which I know he would not answer honestly, would be how much of the quarterback trait also includes neck up? Because that you can't measure on the field. You can't, you know, there's no 40-yard dash time for that. So that would be a question that I have.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Tyler's question is next. He says, hey, KB, what are your thoughts on the Colts not meeting with Will Levis at the Combine? Any indication of them that them not having interest, perhaps a smokescreen, as I believe the Colts also didn't meet with Quentin Nelson at the Combine, but I may be misremembering. Now, is that factual? Because they don't make those kind of things public.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, typically what happens is like on draft night, we just ask the guys, hey, what was your interaction like with the Colts during the draft process? And they'll be like, oh, I met with them at the Combine. I had a top 30 visit and honestly, probably more of them. It's like, yeah, I never really talked with them because, and I think a part of that is like, you feel like you've done so much great homework on them and they're such a clean prospect. Why waste your time or why tip your hand? And I think in Levis's case, you could make the argument, Eddie, of the four guys. There are some that think he is the cleanest guy, again, head up, in the type of leader he is, the type of worker he is. I think all these guys check that box to a nice degree, some more than others.
Yeah.
I'm not going to act like there's red flags really with any of them in that area. You don't have like Jalen Carter situations with any of them. Or, you know, when Kyler Murray came out, you had the question of just how all in would he be on the game of football. You know, there's none of that with these guys. Now, I would definitely want to meet with Levis and go over that Kentucky film. You know, I think that would be something you would definitely want to do. But again, doing that in a top 30 visit, doing that in a private workout, yeah, that to me is where it matters more. I've never been one that reads too much into these sorts of things. Like, you know, the Colts met with Jordan Love in kind of a one-on-one Zoom very late in the process, basically to think like, man, what is this all? You know, remember all the Jordan Love hype?
Yep.
Especially with the Colts. And the Colts are finally like, all right, we're going to meet with them. And they just came away. They weren't very blown away by him. And that was that. You know, just because you meet with them doesn't mean you love them, doesn't mean you hate them. It's just get a little bit more intel on them. So I try not to read. I know it's juicy, but I try not to read too much into it.
The comment you made just a minute ago about a Levis of not overlooking the 2021 tape. The question I have as a rebuttal is he that same quarterback?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. I mean, that's the hardest question to answer. The Will Levis camp would say Eddie Garrison, new offensive coordinator in 2022, tons of injuries around him, a lot of personnel change. That all factored into it. And the
injuries?
Injuries to him, yeah. The counter to that would be, all of a sudden, some scar tissue developed, and when adversity hits, he crumbled a bit. You know, you can look at it glass half full, glass half empty, and I know it's kind of lazy that we always go back there, but that's kind of like the whole Josh Allen thing. You know, junior year, much better than senior year. Senior year, horrific against Oregon. I mean, that's the one like big-time quality opponent. So you could make the argument, Eddie, that Levis might be a harder case study than Richardson. You know, Richardson is much more inexperienced than Levis. Levis is a little bit older. He's been in college a little bit longer. Like, that's the one where Richardson, you're banking on. He hasn't had enough time playing the position. Levis has had, theoretically, plenty of time. The argument there is just, was he in an environment to support him the best?
I'm not trying to get overly away from Twitter questions, but are we completely overlooking the aspect that they could take a... They could take Hendon Hooker later. I don't know where they're at in terms of where they value him and if they actually like him or not. Because there's been people, I think Chris Sims put him out as his third quarterback. And I know that it seems like the buzz around Hooker being a first-round pick the past week or so has been growing more and more.
Yeah, Daniel Jeremiah had him 23 to the Vikings, I believe, in his mock. I do not think Hendon Hooker would be there at 35. So if you want him, you got to go earlier. Hooker's interesting, Eddie, because think about it. You know, Lamar Jackson was the fifth quarterback taken in 2018. Typically, when you get into the fourth or the fifth quarterback taken in a draft and you're debating them like round one, round two, Jordan Love would probably fall into this category as well. Usually, they have a massive ceiling. And the question is, in Jackson's case, could he be a quarterback? Could he throw? And in Love's case, it was... Is there Mahomes type ability in there? Hooker's not really that. Hooker's like, he's safe. That's kind of the word a lot of people use with him. Obviously, there's an injury question, which to me is fascinating. Because when you see these teams late round one, you know, if you're Seattle or you're Detroit and you have that additional first round pick at 18 and 20, but you've got the veteran already in place, wouldn't you be more attracted to a Richardson, a guy that supposedly needs to sit and needs to grow? Whereas Hooker... If he sits for 2 years, Eddie, he's 27 years old.
Yeah.
Like, I know it's not like walking up the 16th hole, but then all of a sudden, you know, things are a little bit dicey on that front. So Hooker is one that I would like just a little bit more potential out of my quarterback selection. But having said that, I still think he's a pretty good player.
I agree with you there. Connor's Twitter question is up next. How do we pay record money for a kicker but let Paris Campbell walk for $1.5 million after keeping him for injury seasons? Is Chris Ballard paying the wrong positions again or a master plan?
Yeah, Connor, it's head-scratching to me. You know, when we talked about Matt Gay, this cannot and should not impact your other moves the rest of the offseason. And, you know, to me, Eddie, wide receiver was already a need, and when you let Campbell walk, you just further that need. Again, I think McKenzie helps, but he doesn't cure it all.
The guy running today at a pro day, Jackson Smith and Jigba, he was timed around 4.5 on his 40.
Hmm.
Now, I'm not saying this could happen, KB, because we know that Chris Ballard loves those picks. You're just tapping a little bit here. Do you think he could trade back in late first round if he liked Jackson Smith and Jigba?
Boy, I mean, knowing Ballard, 4.5 in round one for a wideout, I don't know if that meets the traits. I know he's laterally extremely good athlete.
Yeah.
So maybe that would check that. But again, Eddie, this is where you're getting into some questions about the lack of free agency movement. I would argue right now, purely, cornerback and offensive line are bigger needs than wideout. I think they're all needs.
I agree with you. I agree with you.
To really like rank them, I'd probably put it at 3.
Yeah, I'd agree. With the recent reports of the Colts looking and now officially signing Gardner Minshew, this is from Will, do you see this as an insurance or competition move? Or the Colts realizing there's a legitimate chance their guy isn't there and we go a different route in the draft, such as trading back or going defense?
Yeah, I don't look at it at all. I don't think this move impacts draft position at all. I think the beautiful thing about Minshew, and I should have mentioned this earlier about him, Eddie, the other thing I think you really like about him, I think he's pretty low maintenance. I think he's perfectly content with, which I know that says like he's not a competitor. I think he realizes he might be needed to start 17 games and he might need to sit for 17 games.
And he's going to have fun doing it.
And the mania will have fun doing it. But again, I think he's pretty low maintenance, which the contract tells you everything that you need to know. The Colts don't know how much they're going to need him.
Plus, he brings a moxie. He brings a swagger.
He's got swag. There's a reason why I haven't showed Maddie any pictures of him.
Still?
I'm trying to hide. Trying to hide.
You'd have to think she's seen by now.
I know she does follow the Colts on social, but, you know, hopefully she is not. She's not mentioned it, which, trust me, she would.
Now, could she be not mentioning it for your confidence?
Well, that would be a slap in the face, Eddie, at me. I think she knows I could handle that. At least I think I could. I may pout for a few minutes.
Hey,
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Evan, do you guys think the Raiders are still likely to trade up and draft a quarterback since they just spent money on Jimmy Garoppolo? Craig says this is the same for the Seahawks, who just paid Geno Smith over $100 million. He was worried before those moves, but not now.
Craig, if I'm wrong, Eddie, but isn't the Geno Smith like heavily guaranteed in year one?
I think it was like 50, 60, maybe? 50,
a lot
60?
Of guarantees in year one.
Yeah.
I'd say one question is this. Would they view Anthony Richardson as sitting for multiple years? Because if you think he's going to sit for two, then you might be more content with Jimmy G or Jared Goff in Detroit or Geno Smith in Seattle. You know the team that I'm curious about, Eddie? In particular because the Colts are sitting there at 4? What if the Tennessee Titans came screaming up from 11? It's a little bit further back. They don't have maybe the same ammo that Seattle and Detroit do at 5 and 6, but that is one that I have thought about.
I do too, but I mean,
a new GM trying to make a big splash. They literally look like they're stripping it down.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. They could be really, really bad this upcoming year to be in the Caleb Williams and Drake May.
So maybe they're one eye that way, but it's, you know, that's the beautiful part of it. And it goes back to the Carson Wentz draft when you had the Eagles trade from 15 to 2. And I think the Rams traded up, if I'm not mistaken, as well. That was a pretty significant trade for Goff. So, you know, it's not unheard of.
Gary would like you to help him by talking him off the ledge.
Oh, okay. All right, Gary. Yeah, not the easiest task, but here we go.
And he says that you've said this before for about a decade, that we have to get by Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, and Patrick Mahomes tell me how we build to beat those guys, or am I wearing blue and cheering for at least, or at best, 9 wins every season for the next 10 seasons? Seriously, what's the plan?
Well, it's hard. I guess let's acknowledge that. This is not an easy process. Eddie, I would argue I've never seen the AFC look like this at the quarterback position.
Negative.
I mean, it is.
I don't think we've seen it across the NFL of it being so
one-sided.
Dominant.
Yeah. It's crazy. The talent and the age, which I think you have to realize. Gary, I'm just such a believer that you have to try. You have to get the bat off your shoulders. You really never truly know on these quarterbacks until you get them into your own building. You never know. I mean, in Allen's case, where was he drafted? 7th? In Mahomes' case, where was he drafted? 10th? So even those teams were projecting a little bit, and there was an unknown, and they weren't a slam dunk. You know, Burrow would qualify more as a slam dunk considering he was the number one overall pick. But you have to, I think, attempt it. You have to try. And again, when you go 4-12-1 and you're sitting there and you haven't taken a quarterback in the first 3 rounds in a decade and you have the 4th overall pick, you've got to come away with generational. You have to try and come away with generational. That's got to be the goal, particularly when you have this quarterback void like you do. So you draft. You try and develop, you try and support that quarterback, and you see where you fall. Because if you don't try, then you're not even getting to 9 or 10 wins. And again, it's not like Allen in 2018 or Mahomes in 2017. It's not like they were these can't-miss prospects. Unquestionably, they're going number one. I mean, they were not Caleb Williams hype or, you know, anything. Either they weren't even CJ Stroud or Bryce Young. So I'm not acting like one of these four from this year's class will turn into that, but I think just to sit here and be like, oh, there's no chance any of those guys are good, I think that's a little short-sighted.
3 questions to go. Rob asks, which is the bigger risk, Bryce Young and his lack of physical traits or Anthony Richardson and his lack of proven throwing accuracy / quarterback polish? To me, on the Anthony Richardson side of this, I don't think it's a lack of proven throwing accuracy. He has accuracy. It's just inconsistent.
Yeah, I would say it is the accuracy part. You know, to me with Bryce Young, the hardest trait to teach a quarterback that I think is the most important is poise.
Yep.
I think that's the hardest one. Poise / processing. Knowing where to go with a football. That to me is the most difficult aspect to try and mold into a quarterback. And I think Bryce Young has that. So I would rather have that than I'd rather have that and a lack of height than have the physical traits, but have questions about accuracy and consistency, which is probably the better way to put it. Because like you said, there's certainly throws on film with Richardson that you really, really like, but you know, does water just naturally find its level? That's kind of where I'm at.
Jordan, hey, KB, how big of a loss do you think Brian Decker was when it comes to the, quote, character of the players when they draft? And do you have someone else who is in that position now, or do they?
Yeah, they haven't announced anything on that front.
Is that more of a Frank Reich thing than a Ballard thing then?
Well, originally it was Ballard, very much Ballard thing. You know, I think Reich and him obviously struck a great relationship, and I mean David Tepper's got to be emptying the pockets, I think, a little bit more than
maybe
doing here.
We'll pay out your contract in Indianapolis, and we'll give you an extra mil or $500K.
I'm reading a little bit too much into this, but you know, I think there are some. Yeah, I should probably look this up because I hate to be misspeaking on our military, but I think there are some bases down in that area of the Charlotte, Carolinas that, you know, maybe Brian Decker had ties to, and he wants to be closer to that area for some reason.
Fair.
Background, things like that. Now, Eddie, you've brought this up frequently, and I think it's worth repeating. You know, Brian Decker was also heavily involved in the head coaching search, sitting on these interviews. So I'm not going to sit there and act like it is some major gargantuan loss when I have people inside that building telling me, you don't understand how bad the culture was, and he was the quote-unquote character culture guy. Like, you know, I mean, so I'm not going to act like it's a major loss. But he was someone that clearly had intel and they trusted. So, you know, maybe that's more for the immediacy here in 2023 and the draft moves they potentially will make. But, again, I agree with Chris Ballard's thoughts on high character. I just think it's something that you need to, you know, find a balance and not put all your chips into that basket.
Yeah, I know. The previous regime didn't.
That basket? Yeah.
Yeah.
All your chips into the table.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All chips in, KB.
Thank you, Coach.
But, I mean, but it's interesting. I mean, the previous regime did not have a good culture, did not have a good, you know, character. And now that it's kind of established with the new wave of, quote, blue chip players that are in the locker room, I don't know. I wonder if Chris Ballard can say, hey, we may not need, you know, a replacement to this because we've got Shaq Leonard, we have Quentin Nelson, we have Jonathan Taylor, we have Michael Pittman Jr.
Yeah, but again, as the counter to that, like, maybe those guys are more of an issue than you think. Maybe that peak leadership is not at that level.
Zaire Franklin.
You know, culture-wise, some of those guys, obviously, I would think are great leaders, but clearly there is something that internally is not going well. Again, I don't think it's the biggest loss in the world, but it's probably more curiosity than anything for me of like, that's a guy they trusted a whole lot.
Yeah.
And now he's gone.
Yeah. Final Twitter question comes from the Beer League Chirper. Wide receivers should be a point of emphasis in the draft and or free agency. And with a rookie quarterback, why not go with an experienced wide receiver that is a shoe-in Hall of Famer such as DeAndre Hopkins? Rumors say a second-round pick is what Arizona is looking for. Why not?
Boy, experience, he certainly checks that. First off, would DeAndre Hopkins want to come here?
Oh, he would want to torch the Texans twice a year, I assure you that.
I would think he'd rather win than torch the Texans, so I don't know if that – I would like to think he's going to probably find some other teams that maybe check that box for him. So, yeah, experience, yes, but I don't know. I felt like – I feel like we've seen a little bit of tapering off from him. And obviously, you know, he had the PED suspension last year. That played into some of that. And I get it's a really weak free agency class for wideouts. I mean, you mentioned some of those names earlier. And again, I also think while Hopkins is a really nice player, he falls a little bit more into that power forward mold. And I think it's important to try and make sure you keep that that room as diverse as possible.
Before this trade happens, I'm assuming it'll happen relatively soon before the draft. You know, the Bengals sign left tackle Orlando Brown. Jonah Williams, a former first-round pick out of Alabama. He's 25 years old, has reportedly requested a trade from Cincinnati, and it appears that the market is kind of heating up for the 25-year-old. Do you think the Colts should take a look at him? He's got 1 year left. Cap, his salary this year is 12.6.
Yeah, no. I would certainly make a call, just, you know, curiosity in terms of what the price tag would look like. Correct me if I'm wrong, but just had a serious injury or coming off a serious injury.
He did.
You know, Bernard Raimann, I think, deserves a chance to be the guy at left tackle. I don't know if Bernard Raimann has great position flexibility, to be honest with you. I know a lot of people are like, yeah, just get, you know, go get Orlando Brown and put Bernard Raimann at guard. Your question about Raimann is his strength. You put him at guard, that's going to be a little bit more exposed. So I would give a call. But I think you've almost backed yourself into a corner, Eddie, with all your other needs, that you have to have Raimann work out. You, it, like, at quarterback, at edge rusher, at wide receiver, and at left tackle, and at corner, you obviously can't give a first-round pick to all of them. So I feel like with Raimann, you've just got to hope it works out.
Totally agree with you there.
He's Eddie Garrison. I'm Kevin Bowen. We'll come back next week for a podcast. Like I said, draft right around the corner. Written content all available at 107.5thefan.com. Enjoy the Sweet 16 and Elite 8, everybody. And we'll talk to you next week.